Dear students of my course, this is part 9, lecture 9 of the network science course. To start this lecture, please open PhD SEM 9 PowerPoint file, and you should see the title slide, which is Networks and Stability, Part 9, Learning and Decision Making of Complex Systems, and this is also a hypothesis. This is actually the second hypothesis which I am giving you an account about as a close of this network science course, and both mechanisms are describing general adaptation mechanisms of complex systems, described or perceived as networks. The very first one was the plasticity rigidity cycles as they form a learning mechanism, and this second one is actually about decision making of complex systems, as you can see on the next slide. To start the idea, I just give you some key initial statements, and the very first statement which I would like to give you is that learning increases the weight of edges involved. This was actually discovered or thought about by Alexander Bain in 1874, so almost 150 years ago, and then Santiago Ramón y Cajal, the very famous neurobiologist, was confirming this and extending it or making it very specially stated to neurons. Now Jerzy Konorski, more than 70 years ago, was the person who originated first the idea that indeed the neurons should increase the edge weights, actually the contact strengths between them, if they are participating in a learning process together. It was Donald Hebb in 1949 who wrote actually a book about this, and he kind of popularized this idea by stating it very clearly that those neurons which are fire together wire together, so those neurons which are active at the same time should be actually linked or should be actually connected, and this connection should actually increase its strengths if this learning process is taking place in our brain. Now, the Hebb hypothesis or the Hebb rule was extended by Erkki Oja. Erkki Oja was a Finnish scientist, and he extended it almost 30 years later. Oja realized that if you just increase the weights of some edges by the learning process, after a while the whole system will be overexcited. So this is not reaching stability, and this gives actually instability to the system. So Oja was designing a kind of corollary to this statement, that besides the process what was described by Donald Hebb, that the edge weights should increase if those edges were participating in a learning process, Oja was extending the principle, stating that the total edge weight should remain the same. So all the other edges, actually, which haven't been participating in the learning process, should fade away, should be forgotten a little bit. Actually, forgetting is not so general as it was stated in a mathematical model of Oja. It is also very well regulated, as we know it by now. But this extension proved to be very essential indeed for the stability of any complex system, including neuronal networks. Now, very interestingly, the Donald Hebb hypothesis was only proved very recently, a few years ago, by Kari Loraid and co-workers in a very nice science paper, when they actually showed that during the learning process of a living mouse, indeed, those synapses which have been involved in encoding the memory engram, in encoding the result of the learning process, were becoming more stronger. So they were attaching, they were connecting the neurons much stronger after the learning process than before. Now the second preliminary or initial statement is about the development of attractors. This was stated first by William Little, who was a mathematician, and later, in a much more extended way, by John Hopfield. Both of them got to the final point, which was more clearly stated by John Hopfield, that learning actually develops or deepens attractors. So attractors of state space are actually developed by a Hebbian learning process. So Hebbian learning process is not only changing the structure of the network, but it is also changing, obviously, the state space of the whole complex system. And those stable points of the state space, when the whole complex system is likely to reside to a longer time, so likely to be found for a longer time, these are the states of the state space which are more stable than the others. These states are called attractors, because if the complex system is residing in the state space in the vicinity of such an attractor, then it will go towards the attractor, then it will stabilize itself by going towards the attractor. Obviously, most complex systems do not have only one attractor. Protein structures have quite sometimes only one attractor, which is the single one conformation, native conformation of the protein structure. But even proteins have quite many times several attractors, like conformational states, and they can actually change from one attractor to another, change their conformation, for example. We ourselves are people. As people, we have billions of attractors. Each idea of us is an attractor of our brain. So we are actually going to explore hundreds of attractors in the next moment. If we learn something, then one of these attractors is becoming more, is gaining priority, is gaining momentum, is gaining stability, is gaining popularity, is gaining a larger probability to get occupied. How is it going through, or what is the reason of this process? Exactly, the Hebbian learning process. So when those edges are increasing in their edge weight, which have been participating in the learning process, parallel with this, the whole network, the whole complex system, is stabilizing one of its attractors. In this process, as the attractor is becoming stabilized, the attractor is actually deepened, as we are seeing it, having a kind of three-dimensional image of the attractors, which is kind of nonsense, because the attractors have not a three-dimensional space, but a hundred-dimension or million-dimensional space, which we cannot comprehend. So this is why we have this simple picture of deepening attractors. Hopfield, John Hopfield, was figuring out networks which are built up by neurons, artificial neurons, mathematical representations of neurons as nodes. And actually, the neural networks, so those networks which we use for simulation right now, one form of these neural networks is actually the Hopfield network, which was designed by John Hopfield in the 1980s. Now, this Hopfield attractor networks are actually used as artificial intelligence models right now, and therefore this whole methodology became very famous. Now, going to the next slide, I'm giving you some more key initial statements, two more. I just would like to remind you that we have a network core and we have a network periphery, and the network core, which is represented by these red hubs, is at the center, and it is very well connected, which means that the connections are having a high weight, and the high weight is represented here by a solid line and bold line. However, most nodes for the network periphery, these are the green nodes in this network representation, and they are only connected weakly. And actually, peripheral nodes are very seldom connected with each other. There are all only two such connections in this particular networks and network, and all the other peripheral nodes are only connected to each other via the core nodes. So if you would like to reach another periphery node from a periphery node, then you have to go to the core first. Now, the core is evolutionarily conserved and shielded from the environment. It is shielded by the periphery nodes from the environment. So, for example, in proteins, it is quite obvious or plausible, because periphery nodes are on the outside, core nodes are the inside, so they are shielded. But if you are a very powerful person in the society, then you are not going to on the street alone, but you have bodyguards and you have several people around you, and they are actually physically shielding you from most of the contacts, and only those people are allowed to meet you who are allowed, so whom were either planned or whom you allow at that very moment. So most of the core, even in the human society, is shielded from the environment. Now, responses of complex systems form a few attractors, and this was first stated by Stuart Kaufman, who is the founder of our field, and this was more than 50 years ago, in 1969. Actually, this can be observed in all complex systems, not only in the model systems where Stuart observed them 50 years ago, and this is why this statement was becoming so general and so important in complexity science or in network dynamics. Now, attractors of the state space represent the most important responses of complex systems. So our best ideas or next decisions, the conformations of a protein, the decisions of a social group are all forming actually attractors of the state space of that particular complex systems. And what was discovered by Reiko Albert and Achuzi Mochizuki, a Japanese researcher independently from each other a few years ago, that attractors are actually determined by node of the strongly connected component, which is the core of the network. So the core of the network is determining the attractors. However, as I will show you in a moment, the novelty, the innovation is coming from the periphery. So peripheral nodes should become core nodes. And when Hebbian learning process is taking place, then this is actually what is happening. Peripheral nodes are becoming core nodes, so they are reconfiguring the core. That will be actually the take-home message of this lecture. So first I would like to give you the open question. We know a lot on complex networks, we know a lot on their attractors now, but we know surprisingly little how a complex system develops and encodes a new attractor when it needs a new response in a new situation. So this lecture tries to give you a generally applicable answer to this question. Now, what is this answer? This is about the fast and slow syncing of networks. If there is a usual information which is coming to the complex system or network, then opinion leaders have consensus. And you can see the opinion leaders as the core of this network. There are four smiling nodes. These are for forming the core. These are the hubs of this network. As previously, the green nodes are the periphery of the network. Now, if all the core persons are or nodes of the network are agreeing, and here obviously agreement is in quotation marks, if this is a protein and the nodes are amino acids because they don't have consciousness, but if those are agreeing, those can do only the same, so they encode only one attractor, then after such a change coming from the environment, which is a usual information, then the network is giving a fast and strong response, obviously. Now, the situation is completely changed if the information is new. If the information is new, then opinion leaders disagree what to do in this particular situation. So the excitement, the excitation, the change is propagating in the network. It is not dissipated by the opinion leaders themselves, because they are just passing this piece of information to each other and they don't know what to do with it. They have different ideas about it and therefore they disagree. So what is actually happening? That the information is going all through in the network and it is going back to the periphery. And even peripheral nodes are having a chance to contribute to the solution of this problem. They might not know the solution of this problem, but it might happen that the network is actually reconfiguring itself and some peripheral nodes are becoming attached to each other. And in these newly formed groups of peripheral nodes are starting to know the answer, starting to be able to dissipate this change coming from the environment, which means that know the correct answer to solve the problem. So this process is much slower than the previous process was. And this slow process, slow response, requires the contribution of the whole community. And this is what we call democracy, actually. And democracy is always slow. I mean, democracy is not only a simple kind of decision-making process, like you are voting yes or no, because first you have to figure out what to vote about. And then you have to crystallize the two ideas. And then you have to convince people about these two ideas. And then you may realize that not only two ideas are existing. And this is what is missing, usually, from the current societies. Forget about that for a while. So this is actually a slow process, and I would like to point out that in the two networks there is one very radical change, which is difference between the two networks, that in the first network, when opinion leaders had consensus, there is this red dashed line edge missing from the network. So quite many times the peripheral nodes are becoming connected when they are trying to reach a new solution, and this is what is represented by this dashed red line in the opinion leaders disagree case, in the case when the information was new. Now, this is actually the first mechanism I would like to show you as a possibility by solving this problem, which is the connection of distant nodes. Distant nodes of the periphery are becoming connected quite often, as I told you before, or in the previous slide, when there is a novelty which is formed. And this was actually stated first by Henri Poincaré more than 100 years ago, that connecting formally distant nodes, which are actually in the periphery, because they should be in the periphery. Core nodes are very close to each other. Peripheral nodes are the only nodes which are distant from each other. This gives novel creative solutions. Poincaré was stating it first about mathematics and about human creativity, but this is a general statement which is valid to all. So the point too is that the connection between these distant nodes at the periphery is becoming stronger later on. So this edge is getting used when it's established first randomly, perhaps. Then it is getting used more and more, therefore it is getting stronger and stronger and stronger. And this is actually what is the Hebbian learning process. And just think about it, that if formerly there were a few nodes which were connected very strongly, and we were saying that these nodes are forming the core, and now you have two more nodes which are connected to them very strongly, then what should we say? We actually should restate our original statement and should realize that these two novel, formerly peripheral nodes, were becoming now core nodes. So the core is becoming reconfigured. So the point three, that a new core is formed encoding the novel response. Just listen that, or observe that one of the core nodes, which was on the top, is not a member of this new core, which was formed encoding the novel response. So the reconfiguration of the core is not only an extension of the core, but it is also accompanied by forgetting. And the forgetting is represented here, that one of the former core nodes is left out from this new core because it is not necessary for this information circuit, which is encoding this novel property or novel response. Now, the second mechanism may be an edge reversal. So if the network is having directed edges, and in this network it's not clearly visible, but the edges are arrows, so this is a directed network. This is an example network or a simulated network from a paper by László Barabási and colleagues. Then they observe that actually this network is directed by a few nodes. The absolute directors are the red nodes, and these are the same two red nodes in both networks. And the network is also directed by a very, very few nodes, which are the blue nodes in case of the left panel. But in case of the right panel, almost all nodes, by the exceptions maybe 5 or 6, are becoming blue, which means that the network is becoming more kind of democratic. Many nodes are participating in the direction, in the control or controllability of this network. And the difference between these two networks, this is the most important thing, is only a very tiny, 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 tiny change, which is a change of a direction of a single edge, which is highlighted by the yellowish part on the left side of both networks. So there is a tiny difference between the two networks, the change of one edge, the direction, and that changes the whole hierarchy of this large, relatively large network in a dramatic fashion. Now, if you have a directed edge, the direction is usually encoding a difference between the rigidity and plasticity of the two nodes which are forming the edge. How come? Think about a couple. If the husband is very rigid, has a very rigid personality, then the wife is the personality or the person in the couple who has to accommodate her ideas to the husband's ideas. So the direction of this edge is from the husband, from the rigid node, towards the more plastic node, towards the wife in this case, but it can be vice versa, obviously, and in a good marriage it changes time to time. This is the major message. The major message is that the rigid node is the source of the edge, and the plastic node is the sink of the edge, is the end point of the edge. Now, if you change the direction of that particular edge, that actually means that you changed rigidity and plasticity relatively to each other of these two nodes. So actually we know that energy is concentrated in rigid regions of the network, because as I mentioned in the previous lecture, rigid regions are not dissipating the changes, and plastic regions are dissipating the changes. So if the energy is going to a plastic region of the network, it becomes dissipated. If it goes to a rigid region, it stays there. So this is why energy is concentrated at rigid regions of the network, but if it is concentrated at these rigid regions, it does melt them and it makes them more plastic, and that's why the formerly rigid node is becoming more plastic after a change in the network, which is residing in the network for a long time. And this is the novelty, this is the new change, where the network doesn't have a solution and is not able to dissipate this change very easily. And this now has time, this particular node, to become plastic from rigid, because it was accommodating this energy, this kind of change for a longer time. And if it is becoming plastic, then the direction of the edge is actually inversing. And if the direction of the edge is inversing, even if it is a single edge, then the whole network may be reconfigured. This is a very important idea, and I think this is used very often in signaling networks and in most networks, in social networks, and in many, 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 many types of networks in nature. Just think about conflict solving tactics or procedures. If you have a conflict with someone, then quite sometimes you will make a compromise, which means that you become more plastic. So the direction of the edge between you and the other person is kind of changed, at least temporarily. You may realize here that this is a general mechanism of all networks, and not only true for some special networks. Now, decision-making of complex systems is involving core remodeling, as I was telling you before. Conflicts of the network core are mediated by inter-hub bridges in Twitter, telephone networks, and even in fish schools. There are many papers about it. Innovators are often the bridges connecting early adopter hubs, because bridges are not bound by social norms. Hubs are bound by social norms because they have a very dense connection structure. Bridges are usually not having very dense connection structure because they are connecting two modules. They are actually influenced by different inputs from the different modules. So they are actually sources of innovation. Now, the C point is the most important. The new response is encoded by a new segment of the core, which encodes a new system attractor. And I am showing you here an example of a mollusk or a very small animal. And these are neurons, and these neurons are forming a core, which is the grayish area of the figure. And some bluish neurons, which were in the periphery, are attached to the core, and some formerly black neurons, which were formerly in the core, are going to the periphery. But what is the take-home message? The core is becoming larger, is becoming expanded here, and this is encoding an escape response via a repeated threat or to this animal. So this is a very plausible and very important example of core remodeling, which was proven by experiments. So this form of general making or decision making is general. There was a book by Daniel Kahneman, the Nobel laureate. He partially summarized his results, which resulted in a Nobel Prize to him and to a colleague by writing this paper. And the title of this paper, Thinking Fast and Slow. So he was actually discriminating two human thinking processes, fast and slow. And fast thinking processes characterizing our decision making when we know the situation, and slow thinking process, contemplation, is characterizing our decision making process when we have no idea about the solution and we have to think about it for a long time. So even human thinking is can be characterized by this. Mice or even human persons activate their hippocampus, which is in the middle of the brain, highlighted by these reddish neurons in the brain of this girl. And these hippocampal neurons are encoding the correct information about where we are in space, in our flat or in the surrounding. Now, if the animal, the experimental animal, is placed to a maze, to a labyrinth, what has been already explored by this animal before, so the animal knows it, then only a few neurons are becoming active, because the animal knows where to go, where the food is, where the trap is, where the electricity will hit the animal, where the animal can be fed, and everything is clear. When the animal is placed to a maze, to a labyrinth, which is completely new for the animal, then thousands of neurons are becoming active. These are in the periphery then, and these peripheral neurons are forming a new core as the animal is learning now the new conditions. Now, even proteins are showing this, because they have a disorganized periphery. There are proteins which have intrinsically disordered regions. And these intrinsically disordered regions, if they are only partially characterizing the protein, are at the periphery. But most of the proteins, even in with this disordered regions, they have a core, which is a well-folded core, an organized core. And the responses of the protein are coming from the core, if the response is a well-known, well-rehearsed, learned, encoded response by evolution. But this disorganized periphery must act if the protein is experiencing a new solution. And this is why humans, ourselves, have many more disorganized proteins participating, for example, in signaling. 80% of signaling proteins in human body are intrinsically disordered proteins. So they have intrinsically disordered regions. So they have novel possibilities for learning novel situations. This is a great advantage of human body. And actually, as I mentioned to you, human body is good to learn. I mean, it was designed to learn. So in the next slide, I am just stating the original Hebbian statement in a correct form. So cellular networks do not only decide similarly to our brain, but also learn similarly to our brain. This is the take-home message of the second part of this lecture. And the original Hebbian learning process was stated like this: when an axon of a cell A is near enough to excite a cell B, these are neuronal cells, and repeatedly or persistently takes part in firing it, some growth process or metabolic change takes place in one or both cells, such that A's efficiency as one of the cells firing B is increased. This is still quite sophisticated, but actually this says, if you read it carefully, that connection between learning nodes are becoming stronger, or is becoming stronger. Now, learning of signaling networks proceeds in a very surprisingly similar way. Signaling networks do not contain neurons. They are inside neurons, actually. They are in one cells. But this process can be also observed in non-neuronal cells, so in fibroblasts, in hepatocytes, in any other types of cells. And the first example for this process is the example of intrinsically disordered proteins, what I mentioned to you before. Here, protein B has a segment, this kind of top segment, which is having this kind of funny line, dark green line. And that is the intrinsically disordered region of this protein. And when it binds to protein A, then this intrinsically disordered region is becoming ordered. Now, this is happening after the first signal, which is point one. Now, point two comes here, which is the termination of the first signal, when these two proteins are dissociating from each other because there is no signal available any longer, which could keep them associated. Now, for a while, please note that the protein B is still becoming binding competent because the disordered region is not becoming disordered again for a while. So there is a time window here until which the disordered region is becoming still ordered, it is remaining still ordered, and therefore it is able to bind to protein A with a larger efficiency, faster way, stronger, and so on. And repeated signal is coming within this time window, so it is repeated shortly after the first signal, then it produces a faster and more robust signal transmission because this change, the binding of protein A to protein B, is occurring faster because there is no need to organize this order. So the stronger protein-protein interactions upon repeated signal activation is actually representing a Hebbian learning rule in the activation of signaling pathways. So the Hebbian learning rule can be actually generalized not only to neurons, but also to molecules. We found several other examples for this protein translocation, microRNA regulation, chromatin structure reconfiguration. All these are biochemical or molecular mechanisms encoding increases in connection strengths and encoding Hebbian type of learning processes. Now, the learning of signaling networks, this is part three, showing you one of the signaling networks we examined, the epithelial-mesenchymal transition network. Epithelial-mesenchymal transition network plays an important role in the activation of cancer cells when they are forming metastasis. And I am circling by red circles those nodes which are potentially participating in the learning process, and you can see that many nodes, actually a lot of nodes, are potentially participating in this learning process, but not all of them. So there are learning sets of nodes as proteins in signaling networks, and these sets can actually form novel cores of this network and can encode novel information into this network. We don't know too much about this because this is a fairly recent advancement in our laboratory. As you see, it was published only in April of 2020 from our lab, but we are working on this right now. So the take-home message is that this is not the strongest of species that survive, nor the most intelligent, but the one most responsible to change. This was said by Charles Darwin, and I think this is fairly true. And this is also true for us, not only for signaling networks or not only for our brain. So one has to remain very flexible, and one has to be able to forget previous ideas, remember to the bird who was learning his first song, but his first song wasn't his most beautiful song, so he had to forget that, and he had to learn more beautiful songs. So this was my song at the network science course, and I would like to encourage you to forget that and to learn even better songs in your life in the future. So thank you very much for listening about this, and there will be two more lectures about the application of networks in drug design and in network machine learning, artificial intelligence methodology, but my own lectures are completed at this point. Thank you very much for listening.